Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahadiryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Patitamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Okay, we're in verse 63. Janmadi karanatvakya, Janmadi karanatvakya, Lachanena prigupura, Lachanena prigupura, Parokshena grihitvata, Parokshena grihitvata, Vicharadvyaktimakshita. Janma, Adi, Karanatva, Akya, Lakshanena, Bhriguhu, Pura, Parokshena, Grihitva, Grihitva, Atta, Vicharat, Vyaktim, Aikshita. Okay, so what's happening here? This whole section that we're dealing with here is a discussion about the difference between paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam. Jnanam means knowledge. Okay, so the topic here is self-knowledge. So the question is, what is paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge? And what is aparoksha jnanam, direct, immediate knowledge? And how do these two come together? How do these two, why are these two important? Okay, so now, for this, we have to go back just for a second. I'm not going to take you all the way through this. But if you remember what Vidyaranya was talking about in terms of the stages that a person goes through in reference to knowledge. It started with ajnanam, that there's absolute ignorance. Then because of that self-ignorance, there's avritti, a covering that takes place. That avritti allows for a vikshepa, the projection. Right? Now these three, ajnanam, avritti, and vikshepa, are removed first by paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge, and then by aparoksha jnanam, direct, immediate knowledge. And the removal by indirect knowledge and direct knowledge, this paroksha and aparoksha, brings about this shoka moksha, liberation from shoka, liberation from sorrow, and then the unabated ananda, absolute fullness. So the removal of all sorrow and the complete ananda, unlimited ananda, is the what we call the pala, the result of knowledge, right? The problem that a person faces, the problem of bondage that a person suffers from, the samsara, that problem is caused by ignorance. And the solution to a problem which is caused by ignorance is knowledge. Okay? And so if my sense of bondage has for its cause ignorance, then that means that the bondage that I'm experiencing is not real. If it's caused by ignorance, if the cause for the bondage that I'm experiencing means I'm a limited human being subject to birth and death, seeking happiness, and all that I can fed is just momentary moments of happiness, everything that I experience is subject to change, and this is my reality, this is bondage. It's bondage because I cannot achieve what I need to achieve as a human being, which is to be full and complete. Not full and complete in momentary glimpses, but I would like to be a whole person and not have to worry about becoming unwhole in the next minute. And so until I reach or solve this problem that I'm to the point that I can say all is well with me now and I don't have to worry about it anymore, until then I'm seeking to solve this problem. And until I kind of get to the other shore, to the other side of the problem, I am bound because I'm seeking. And I'm bound and seeking because I'm not satisfied with the way I am. I can't say, all is well with me, you know, period. I can say, I want all is well with me, and sometimes I feel fine, but it never lasts. And so I would like to solve the riddle. So that, and is there a riddle to be solved? That's another problem. Maybe there is no riddle to be solved. Maybe the bondage is my natural condition. If the bondage is the truth of my being, then there's really nothing I can do about it except learn how to live with it. What dharma, you know, the understanding of dharma, of proper behavior, of learning how to be kind to others, and all of the values that all the spiritual traditions are teach me, give me a certain antakarana shuddhi, a certain purity of mind that helps me to live with this fact of constant change, fact of birth, the reality of birth and death, the reality of the instability of all experience, including the happy experiences. So all of the spiritual traditions, religious traditions, give us so many values and such an understanding of dharma, proper behavior, to give us relative shanti in this world of change. But that relative shanti that is dependent upon dharma is something that has to be maintained. So it's still not free. If I don't maintain it, if I don't do this properly or that properly, then I suffer sorrow. It's kind of like we wish that dharma would, I don't know, take us more into account. Like, for instance, I may do something adharmic or improper because I didn't really understand the proper way to behave in a given situation. And so I do something, I behave in a way toward another person or toward life or in a job or whatever. I behave in a way that is improper, even though I didn't mean it. I meant to do something well. It's just the way I chose to do it. It really didn't work out at all. So we have all had this experience. Well, it's not like dharma just goes, that's all right. It does. It goes whack. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you stick your hand in fire. Ah! I didn't know that was hot. Why didn't you take me into consideration? Yeah, so the world is complex. And so we can't work our way into this state of perfect behavior, you know, or have the world also behave perfectly toward us so that we can have this type of balanced equilibrium. We try, but we fail. And so this is all of these things are put together are what we call bondage, let alone just the built-in bondage of birth and death itself. Birth and death on every level. And so now, to gain freedom from this bondage, either you are that naturally, you are bound, because after all, everything is bound by change. We know that, and every part of our experience is bound by change. That everything that we experience through our sense organs, every thought in the mind, every emotion we have, all of these experiences that we have are subject to coming and going. So if that is this nature, this world of experience that includes your body, your mind, your sense organs, your moods, your emotions, all of your perceptions, if this is all that there is, then I am bound. And I have to learn to live with it and negotiate it in the best way that I can. There's nothing that can be done. But if I am not bound, if the truth of my being is not bound, then again, there's nothing I can do about it. Because I'm not bound. If that's the truth, that my being is not bound, but is in fact by its own swarupa, by its own nature, whole and complete and free, and not subject to becoming bound, then again, nothing I can do. But there is something I can know. It has to come down to knowledge, because if I am that, there's nothing I need do. But since I don't take myself to be free, and because I'm suffering and experiencing all these problems, you know, there's definitely a price to be paid for that ignorance. But if I can solve the problem by removing the ignorance, then what do I recognize? I recognize that the self that I am always has been and always will be free. And the problems that I'm suffering from are a result of ignorance. That's why just before this, now he's very much engaged in this, understanding this knowledge from indirect knowledge, paroksha jnanam, to direct knowledge, aparoksha jnanam. But before that, he used as the example this whole tenth man story. You know, that with the tenth man, when he thinks all these boys have crossed over a river, and this tenth man counts nine boys, and he says, the tenth man is missing. Oh my God. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Tenth man is missing. I haven't done my job properly because of me. This boy is dead. On and on and on. A whole web of pain, you know, of torture. A torturous situation is now being fabricated because of the missing tenth man. This story is told to make you understand the tremendous power of ignorance. The tenth man is present. I'm the tenth man. There's no problem here. Right? It's not as though the tenth man ever was lost. Before, during, and after, the tenth man has always been the tenth man. There is absolutely zero problem. Nothing has happened. And yet, from the standpoint of the tenth man who forgot to count himself, from the standpoint of that person, there is a terrible problem here. And all the other boys were suffering from the same, only counting of the nine. And so that ignorance created a reality, right? It created a bubble. It created a reality that then they were all living in, and that reality was not a very good one. The reality was kind of a horror story. And so as I've joked so often, Swamiji tells this story, he makes the horse story really terrible. You know, with all of this guy, he imagines all of the parents waiting for the 10 boys to come. All of the parents are there and they're all waiting for their children to come. And there's the one parents are looking. You're looking and their boy isn't there. The boy isn't there. This is the imagination of this 10th man. And then he's going to have to go up to those parents and tell them, I'm sorry, your boy, and I can't remember his name. must have died in the river. You see, the horrible, horrible situation. Well, we have a horrible situation like that. It's a horrible situation because in my mind, I am a limited being. Body, mind, sense, organs, person, all subject to change, all subject to death, subject to disease, subject to terrible unhappiness, so subject to my desires not being met, and the desires that are met being taken away. It is fraught with misery. Right? This circumstance that we find ourselves in is fraught with misery. And even the good things that we have are fraught with misery because we don't know that we can hang on to them, especially nowadays. We don't know what the heck's going to happen to us. So, that's the reality that we are imagining based upon our lack of understanding of your own swarupa, your own nature. And who you really are, who this universe is. And because you are here, right, you are here, this world is here, so your self-experience is, I am a conscious being, I am here, this world that I'm experiencing is here, the whole thing is here, right? And at the same time, I don't know who I am. I am here, as I am, I exist, I am here, but I don't know who I am. I don't know who this one is. That is here. And I'm experiencing this world, but I don't know what this world is that is here. And I don't know what my relationship, this me, is in relationship to this world. And I don't know if this world is just an insentient big slab of concrete, You know? Mother Nature, by slab of concrete I mean something that enjoys no consciousness of its own, and I'm the conscious bubble walking through it, and therefore I really have to take care of myself because Mother Nature is inert. Jada, what we call Jada, what we mean by Jada is that it's not a conscious being. Right? This universe is kind of like Newton's clock. It's just inert, insentient, ticking away, moving along. But it certainly could care less about me. Right? I'm the bubble walking along in it, moving along in it, bumping into other bubbles of consciousness. Right? So, I don't know. And what about the God idea? What about God? All of you, I don't know. Right? Even somebody who says, I believe in God, so on this side, I believe in God. On this side, I don't believe in God. I believe in God, I don't believe in God. And then in the middle, the person says, how can I know whether there's a God or not a God? I'm an agnostic. I'm a believer. I'm an atheist. Right? These are our options. But when you start really analyzing it, whether you believe in God or you don't, or you say you don't know whether there's a God or not, or you say I don't believe in God, the one who's the most correct logically is the one who says I don't know. Right? Because if you, and this is another big problem for us. We can say, you know, I intuit, I feel that there's a God, I believe there's a God, because there's all kinds of signs, there's all kinds of things that make me think there is a God. But then if somebody says, well, have you ever seen him? Has anybody ever seen him? Or her? Or it? Has anybody ever seen God? What does he look like? What does God look like? What can you say? You can say, you know, I believe there's a God. That's all. That's what I believe. Why do you believe it? I believe it. That's all. Something inside tells me that it's true. And something inside, I'm not putting that down at all. It's really what we call Shraddha. Something inside tells me that that is so. I can't prove it, but I believe that that is so. Somebody else says, I wish I could believe that. I've had some people who are atheists actually say that to me. I wish I could believe that. But I don't. I really don't. And other people just say, you know, I can't say one way or the other. And they don't engage in it. How can you say? You know, so this is, just think of the depth of ignorance. The depth of ignorance about around the things that really matter the most, right? Like who I am, for starters, that would be nice to know. Who I am, what is the nature of this creation, and is there a God or not? This is how vast and thorough the ajnanam, the ignorance is. And it doesn't have a beginning. It's like not like somebody can say, well, somebody knew this at one time, or I knew this and forgot. Right? There's no prior knowledge. And so the human beings in this creation are a product, really, of this ignorance. It's not like, well, somebody's ignorant, but this other person has knowledge. No, everybody has this fundamental, fundamental ignorance. And so the Upanishads, what are the Upanishads? What do they posit themselves as? What do they say they are? Because you can't say what it is. I mean, they have to tell you what they are. Right? So the Upanishads present themselves as a means of knowledge to answer these questions, to make you recognize who you are and what this is. They present themselves as a pramana, as a means of knowledge, right, to make you recognize what is actually here. A means of knowledge to remove kind of the ignorance, to make you see. It's like your eyes are a means of knowledge for seeing you know, form or color. Because of my eyes, I can see the painting. Or because of my eyes, I can see all of you. Without my eyes, I can't see that. So my eyes become a means of knowledge for gaining this experience, this cognition. So the Upanishads claim themselves to be a means of knowledge for making me recognize this person, this me that is here, and what this me is in reference to this entire creation. So what is the reality of this self that I am in reference to the body, to the creation, and to God? And so now, what Vidyaranya is doing is looking at how the Upanishads deal with giving knowledge to the student. In terms of, and now how Vidyaranya is dealing with it, he's looking at the Upanishads, which first give the student paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge of the nature of Brahman. The nature of the Brahman as the manifest creation. The nature of Ishwara, let me put it like that. And then having given the student an understanding of this creation and the underlying reality of this creation as Brahman, the infinite conscious being, after having painted this picture, an understanding of the nature of Brahman, so that the student will then say, oh, this is what Brahman is. Brahman is the one, as we'll see in this verse, Brahman is the one from whom all beings are born, because of whom all beings are sustained, and into whom all beings resolve. That being is Brahman. So this is this verse now. That being is Brahman. And so the student now understands, okay, Brahman, that which from which this entire universe, all beings come, is sustained and resolves, that is Brahman. That's paroksha jnanam. Now I have indirect knowledge. And now, if you think of it, if you say Brahman is the reality, another way of saying it, Brahman is the infinite being from which the whole universe, that means all time, space, all beings, the entire universe projects, is born from that, is sustained by that, and goes back into that. That is Brahman. So it's to say, okay, that is Brahman. But that's indirect knowledge. Now the teacher, having unfolded the nature of Brahman in this way, the teacher has to make that student say, now I want you to contemplate on that in these particular ways, which we'll see in a minute, so that the student will realize that that Brahman from which the whole universe comes, is sustained and resolves, that Brahman I am. The teacher has to take the understanding of this paroksha jnanam, this indirect knowledge of Brahman, into the heart of the student, where the student recognizes that that conscious being, which is the cause of the whole creation, is me. So we go forth from the indirect knowledge of understanding Brahman to the aparoksha jnanam, the immediate knowledge, where I understand that the conscious being, which is Brahman, is this self, which is me. And this self, which is me, and the recognition of that, that's direct, immediate knowledge. Because I say, that conscious being is this conscious being. What conscious being? The conscious being that when I say I am, I exist. Okay? Now, when we did the meditation, okay, what were we doing in the meditation? Is, first of all, just allowing yourself to totally not reject the environment. Right? To whatever is going on in your mind, whatever is going on in any of the sensations that are taking place, is to simply allow yourself, your mind, to just simply be with that, accept it. And to, for the moment, have it take a time out. Where, for the moment, We're not going to worry about wanting things to be different, or, you know, wanting life to be different, or politics to be different, or whatever we want to be different. We just have a time out from all of that. So that just for the moment, we can just relax and just see who is here. Who am I? In terms of my own, not who am I in terms of my being Brahman, but who am I? Just my being, my own nature, this kind of very half smile, silent, whole presence that is me, this conscious being that I am. Just giving yourself just a moment to just let that self that you are come to the forefront. Rather than being totally engaged in all of these problems that we have, which are so many. I mean, the mind is very engaged in all of the trials and tribulations of the world, that is by our family and our friends and our job and our country. And it's just, it's endless. So the mind gets all wrapped up in all of this. So you get a time out for a moment, just so that you can let your own being, your own presence, come forward, right? To just be able to notice who you are, the one who is the constant in all of these experiences, but is usually overwhelmed by them, because your mind is usually so engaged in all of this stuff that's going on that you don't even bother about the one who is there, because the mind's working so hard. Okay? Just stop all that for the moment, just to recognize how simple and pure and unassuming and stable your own presence is. Now that presence needs to be connected with Brahman. Or Brahman, the one from whom this whole creation comes, needs to be recognized as that presence. As that very simple presence, which is me. And that's the Mahavakya. That's the Paroksha Jnanam of Brahman. See, if I say, Tat Tvam Asi, that thou art. That's the Mahavakya, which is everything that the Upanishad has to say. This is what the Upanishad says. That thou art. You are that. That is the one from whom this whole creation has come, the Brahman, from whom this whole creation has come, is sustained and resolves. That one that is the self of this entire creation, that one, Paroksha Jnanam, right? That Paroksha Jnanam, that one, you are a Paroksha Jnanam. There is no indirect knowledge of yourself, really. Right? I could tell you, yourself is pure, limitless consciousness, and you could say, oh, really? Anyway, so that's in a way indirect knowledge of direct knowledge. But really, the self-experience, the me, the conscious being that you are, is a paroksha. Right? It is a paroksha by its very nature. But now the buddhi, the mind, has to recognize this aparokshatvam. This immediate shining knowledge of myself. The buddhi has to gain that immediate knowledge of myself. But the immediate knowledge of myself has to be recognized as Brahman. That's the Mahavakya. That this conscious being that I am is this. And so that's why now Vidyaranya is going through now. He's going to be quoting Shruti verses, different Upanishads, to show you that this is what the Upanishad does. This is how it works. So in this first verse, he goes like this. Janmadi karanato akya lakshanena brigahu pura. Pura means formerly brigu was taught by his father. Right? Brigu is the name of a person, of a young man. He was taught by his father. And he was taught the nature of Brahman indirectly initially, by the lakshana, by the characteristics, he was told that Brahman has these characteristics, lakshana. It's pointing to the nature of Brahman as being janmadi karanatva, the one who is the cause of the janma, birth, etc. Okay? So there's a verse here that goes like this. He says in the Bhasha, it goes like this. Bhrigu namakaha kascha rishihi kura. Formerly, he says, formerly a rishi by the name of Bhrigu. Okay? He was taught in this way. Yato va imani bhutani jayanti. From which all these beings are born. Yato va imani jayanti. Okay? It says, from which all of these beings are born. Yena jatani jivanti. By which all of these beings are sustained. Yet priyantya abhisambishanti. Iti ted vijignyasaswa. He says, and that into which all of these beings go, into which all of them resolve, he says, may you meditate on that. May you know that. That one is Brahman, ted Brahma iti. Okay? That one from whom all of these come, because of whom all of these are sustained, and into whom all of these resolve, that one you must know. This is the one to be known. It is this one that is Brahman, ted Brahma. May you know this, he says. Okay, so now, in unfolding Brahman in this way, it's what we call tatastha lakshana. It's kind of just, I'll just do this for a minute, just a technical term, and we'll go into it in depth maybe later. But just so that for some of you it's important to know, it'll fit into your framework. How do we know things, you know, descriptively? Like if I say to you, Brahman is the one from whom all beings come, by whom all beings are sustained, into whom all beings go. I'm not really saying anything about Brahman. I'm saying something about Brahman in reference to other things. Like, it's not really a statement about Brahman itself. But it's a very important statement about Brahman, because Brahman is that from which all this comes, who sustains all of this, and who goes back into all of this. But then you want to say, well, yeah, who is that? Right? I mean, it's a sweeping statement. The whole universe comes from Brahman, is sustained by Brahman, and goes back into Brahman. But then your next question is going to be, wow, but what is that Brahman? What is that Brahman? You see that? This is called tatastha lakshana. It's where the definition of Brahman is, Brahman is being pointed to by something else, through some other means. The example they use for it is like, they use this example, like, say if you're in a village and you look down a street, you know, I'm thinking of a village in India where there's a mud street, just a dirt street, and there are all these huts, you know, on both sides, and they're all exactly the same. Right? They're all clay, you know, with thatched roofs. And you can't tell one from another because they're identical. And so one friend says to the other, oh, my house, see my house down there? He's pointing, yeah, see, do you see my house down there? And the boy says, well, which house? They're all the same. And he says, well, no. If you look down near the end, but see the one house that's got the crow on the top of it, on the top of the chimney? Do you see the one with the crow on the top of the chimney? And the boy looks. He said, yeah, you mean the one that's got the, yeah, that one. There's only one that's got a crow. That house there? He said, yeah, that's my house. My house is the one that has the crow on it. Okay? Now, what does a crow have to do with the house? Nothing, right? The crow has nothing to do with the house in terms of, you can't define a house by a crow. Right? No definition of a crow is going to be a definition of the house. But the crow allows the boy to recognize the house. And otherwise, he couldn't recognize the house because all. So it allows the boy to actually recognize the house. That's called tatastha lakshana. The other type of lakshana, which is going to be absolutely necessary for the aparoksha jnanam, the other type of lakshana is called swarupa lakshana, where the definition, the words are pointing to the thing as it is. In this case, the words would have to be pointing to the red mud with the door, with the thatch roof. They have to actually be describing the object house. Similarly here, if we were to be talking about the nature of Brahman itself, you would say that which is Satchit Ananda, that which is pure existence, which is pure consciousness, which is limitless. You know, that's Swarupa Lakshana, where you're pointing exactly to the being of Brahman. But we need to understand that being also in reference to all of this. Right? Because what is all of this? What are we going to, in the end, discover? That all of this is nothing but Brahman. Right? Brahman is, you'll begin to understand as the Upanishad unfolds, that the one from whom this whole creation manifests, is sustained, and resolves, that one, you are. But to get to that you are, you have to understand the swarupa jnanam, the swarupa lakshana, the absolute nature of Brahman as being pure conscious being. Okay? So now, everybody still with me? Okay. This is really neat, but I have to hopefully do it well. Okay? So now, to go on with this verse just a little bit more. He says, so Bhrigu was taught indirectly, Padokshena, he was taught indirectly about Brahman as being the one from whom the creation has come, sustained, and goes back. Okay? So then, after he's been taught this in detail, Grahitwa, having understood that, so he understands that, but he's been taught thoroughly that, Atta, then, Vichara, from Vichara, he sees, Aikshita means he sees the Vyakti, the truth of it. In other words, it starts out with indirect knowledge because you have no idea who that Brahman is, from which all of this comes. Right? Now, this is the thing. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, which is where this is located, Bhrigu's father starts by making him see that this entire time-space creation, which means that includes all beings, means all of this, everything that is, everything that you experience, all duality, right? This creation is the whole manifestation of duality. This entire projection of duality, of time, space, and everything in it, has its being in something else. It came from something else. It is sustained by something else. It resolves into something else. Whatever that something else is, cannot have anything to do with time. It can't have anything to do with space, with duality, with objects, with anything that exists within time and space and duality. It can't be that. Because time and space, duality, comes from that, right? The whole creation comes from that, is sustained by that, and resolves into that. Now that means also that you, because you are part of this creation, this body, mind, sense organs, you come from this, are sustained by this, and go back into this. And so now Bhrigu's father, Varuni, takes him on a journey of vichara, of analysis, in order to discover what this could possibly be. So Bhrigu first says, it must be food. you know, because this body comes from food, is sustained by food, and goes back into food. But then he realizes, but food itself has a beginning, so it can't be that. So maybe it's the prana, maybe it's the vital force, and now he goes through this whole thing, could it be the vital force, the life force, that life is comes into being and then goes out of being, could it be that? And then he goes through that and says, no, it can't be that, it must be something, because there's consciousness involved, maybe it's the mind. You know, or Hiranyagarbha. Then he goes to the buddhi. Then he goes to the Anandamaya kosha. He goes through all of these koshas as Varuni, as Brigha's father, has directed him. And finally, as he goes in deeper and deeper and deeper, he gets to the Anandamaya kosha, where he recognizes where he can't go any farther. In other words, if I go from this creation inward to the prana, inward to the mind, inward to the buddhi, inward to the ananda, just the conscious being which illumines the mind without any nama-rupa, without any name and form, I get to that conscious being. Now I am at limitless consciousness itself. And it's as he goes through this stage by stage by stage, he gets to the very substratum of being itself, the very substratum of this Maya itself. And when he gets to that place, then, directed by his father in this teaching methodology, he then recognizes that the one from whom all of this comes is that one which is innermost, that innermost being. And that's where the Mahavakya takes place. So that's why he says here, he starts out with the indirect knowledge, but having grasped that, what he takes it, he's directed by his father step by step by step to the recognition of that which is innermost. And at that time, he recognizes the nature of existence itself, of being itself. So let's do this next verse because it completes, it doesn't quite complete it, but almost.
Yajapi tvam asi jatra, yajapi tvam asi jatra, vakyam no che pragov pita, vakyam no che pragov pita, tatapyanam pranamiti, tatapyanam pranamiti, vacharya stela muktavan, vacharya stela muktavan, Vicharya stela muktavan. Yadyapi breaks into yadi api, yadyapi.
We usually take it as one little phrase. Yadi api, yadyapi. Tvam asi iti atra vakyam na uche brigoho pita. Tata api annam pranam iti. Vicharya stela muktavan. This is a little technical thing here. He says, Brigoho pita na uche. Brigo's father, na uche, he did not say, Brigo's father didn't say the words, Twamasi, you are that. He never said it. When he was teaching, see, we want the Mahavakya, that Twamasi. When Brigo's father was teaching him, first of all, know Brahman to be that from which all beings have come, is sustained, and gone back into. He didn't then direct him, tetramasi, tetramasi, like that. He didn't do that. Rather, he made Brigu do vichara analysis, starting here with the body as the locus of the vichara, and then moving into the sense organs and the mind as the locus for the vichara, for the analysis. And so he gave him the locus with which to look into, and as he was looking into, he recognized that one from whom all things have come. Because the one from whom all things have come can't be away from you. Right? If there's one thing from which all things have come, you can't be separate from that. And so if I've described Brahman in that way, and then I give you a locus, a place to begin the vichara, and make you go deeper and deeper and deeper into that which is inmost, you arrive at the Swarupa Lakshanam, the actual nature of Brahman, because there is nothing that is apart from that Brahman, so it has to resolve into you. Do you see that? There's no other way, because there is no other thing. If Brahman is that from which the whole universe has come, is sustained and resolves into, that includes you. Right? You can't be separate from it. And yet, everything about you, your body, your mind, your sense organs, your eye notion, what? Everything that makes a jiva is going to resolve. Right? What about you? See? What about you is going to be Brahman, the one from whom everything comes, is sustained, and resolves. It's not going to be what has come. It's not going to be what is sustained. And it's not going to be what is resolved. It's going to be the one that is there during what has come, is sustained, and resolved. That one's not coming, sustained, or resolved. You see what I mean? And so, how are you going to discover directly, immediately, aparoksha jnanam, who that one is? By being with this one and seeing what is the most innermost, what is innermost. And so Bhrigu's father gave him that sthanam for where to begin the vichara, and took him step by step. You have to read the whole chapter in the Taittiriya in order to really see this fully, but this is what he's talking about. So here he says, even though yadyapi twam asi, you are, quotes, iti here. Here, Bhrigu's father didn't say, here in this teaching, you are that. Tatapi, but still, annam pranam iti vicharya stalam uktavan. But still, he did tell the place to do the vichara, to do the analysis. Such as what? Annam, food. Start with food. This body is food. Then go to pranam, the vital force. So by directing him like that, he made him actually recognize in his own self-experience what is Brahman. Because, in fact, you are Brahman. And so the you has to be weeded out. Right? You have to be you have to recognize yourself amidst all of this, and so directing him, he came to see it. So let's do this last verse. Annapranadikosheshu suvicharya punah punah. Suvicharya punah punah, ananda vyaktim ikshitva, ananda vyaktim ikshitva, brahma lakshma pya yujat. He says, the anna prana adi kosheshu, anna prana adi kosheshu, suvicharya punah punaha, ananda vyaktim ikshitva, brahma lakshma api ayuyujat. He says, punah punaha, again and again, suvicharya, again and again, having done this thorough vicharya, su means proper, thorough, appropriate, having done this vichara, this analysis, again and again, in reference to all of the koshas. So remember the five koshas? The annamaya kosha is the food sheath. Pranamaya kosha, the vital force. Manomaya kosha is the mind. Vijnanamaya kosha is the intellect. Anandamaya kosha is the ananda, the bliss sheath. Like that. These five sheaths are the kind of coverings on a individual and on a total level. So having done this analysis as directed by his father, having done it thoroughly, kosha by kosha, covering by covering, anandavyaktim ikshitva, he then, through this analysis, he recognized the ananda of the anandamaya kosha. What is ananda? You have to be careful about this bliss thing. Ananda is the nature of yourself. And you're sitting there, when, like in the meditation, when you recognize that one who is like a half smile. That simple being that you are, that is whole and complete, is lacking nothing, is whole and complete in its very beautiful, unassuming simplicity. That's the ananda. That's Brahman. That self is Brahman. And that self is absolutely whole and beautiful in its unassuming simplicity. That's why these, if you think of these beautiful statues, or statues of the Buddha, you'll often see, like I have one in my office actually, just sitting there with a beautiful smile. All of the deities in India, and the, you know, they're sitting there, and they will have this expression that has absolute peace, this slight smile. In fact, you know, when they make these idols, they're called murtis. It's a very kind of a sacred. There's so much sanctity around the actual carving of the idol. And the very last thing that is done is the face. And it's very important to get that expression, that gentle smile. And then the very last thing they do is the eyes, to bring tejas, to bring life to the idol. You know, and when you see them, when you see an idol like that, and you just look at the face, look at the posture, you see the peace. Now that is a symbol. It's a symbol of your being, of the nature of you. And so sometimes a meditation that Swami Chinmayananda used to do, this meditation where you just sit, and he would guide you to just sit and bring that half smile, imagine that half smile, and just see it as something which is an expression, you know, like a symbol of your nature, which is so profoundly simple. And we call that ananda. The problem is ananda. There's no more beautiful word than that for the simplicity of your being. And yet, unfortunately, ananda is translated as bliss. And bliss means some big experience that we have in the world, the big bliss experience. And we're not walking around, like, would anybody right now say, oh, I'm in bliss? Probably not. I don't feel I'm in bliss. that word doesn't work. But if I say ananda, I know what ananda means. I say, yes, absolutely, I am ananda. I can say right now, I am ananda. I know exactly what I mean. I know what that ananda is. Now, do you see me being blissed out? No. You can say this also, but the reason that stops you from saying it is because of your definition of ananda as a bliss experience within the world where you have, you know, sadness to just neutral, to happy, to joyful, to bliss. But what you have to recognize is the ananda that they're talking about, the swarup ananda that is your own nature. So here when he says that, see, when they use this in the Sanskrit, they don't know that you're translating it as bliss and getting all screwed up by that. They don't know that. So here, anandam ananda vyaktim ikshitva, having seen the ananda, the vyakti, the actuality of it. The vyakti is the actual form, not form and exactly as form, but what is the actual nature of the thing is the ananda vyakti. So having seen that clearly, then what? Brahma lakshma api Ayuyujat. Then he connects that with the nature of Brahman. He connects that ananda that has been directly recognized. Oh, that is the Brahman they're talking about. That is the Brahman. I am that Brahman. So these two Ayuyujet is an aorist form for yuj, to unite. These two come together. The Brahman that's being talked about with the self that I am. The problem we'll see next week in the next verse, they bring in an objection. Well, if you say, I am Brahman, the one from whom the creation has come and gone back, that's not Swarupa Lakshana. How can he, that's not the actual nature of Brahman. How can he unite that, the one from whom all of this has come, with the self, with his own self? And then Vidyaranya says, okay, don't worry about it. Yeah, that's because the Swarupa Lakshana of Satyam Jnanam Anantam, the very nature of Brahman, that was revealed earlier. And so he talks about that in the next verse. Yeah. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, the Swarupa Lakshana of Brahman as being pure existence, consciousness, limitless. In the previous chapter, that Swarupa Lakshana had been unfolded in another section. And so that was taken care of in that section. Now they're doing this Tattvastha Lakshana. So anyway, that's complex. I'll explain it next week. That's enough for now. Let's stop. Let's take a minute. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.